You're listening to Making Money Online with Lisa Johnson, the podcast that tells you what it really takes to build a business and the simple steps to get you there. I'm determined to share with you the reality of easy, simple business marketing tips to make passive income so that you can start making money online. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the podcast, which is all about starting to act like a CEO rather than just an entrepreneur, which I know is a bit of a weird title, and we'll go into it in a second. But first of all, I just wanted to say thank you, because so many of you are sending me messages saying that you're really enjoying the podcast, and it makes quite a lot of difference to someone like me who, you know, gets on and talks to herself for 20 minutes, which is what it feels like you're doing when you're doing a podcast, especially like I've only been doing it a month. So it feels like sometimes I'm just chatting away to myself. Is anyone even listening? Does anyone even care about what I'm saying? So when I get nice messages saying, oh, you really helped me with this, or this put this into perspective, that really massively helps me. So just wanted to say thank you, because I'm always appreciative when people do things that they're not getting anything back for. They're just writing to me to let me know they enjoyed it, which is a lovely thing. So let's talk about acting like a CEO rather than an entrepreneur. So the reason that I think this is important is because when I started in business, I felt like I was just sort of playing at having a business. And if you felt like that, when you just, you know, you're like, I am a business owner now, and you start this business and you feel a bit like a fraud because you've only just started a business, so that's fair. And you feel a bit like you're playing at it. You're just kind of working it out as you go along. And then slowly, when I started to make a bit of money in the business, then I sort of felt like an entrepreneur, because entrepreneurs come up with new ideas for things like courses and programs, and they sell them. And so I was like, okay, I'm an entrepreneur. This is good. I'm coming up with these ideas. I'm doing it. I'm making money from it. So I'm an entrepreneur. And even that felt a bit like fraudulent. Like, entrepreneurs are like those people in Silicon Valley, those people with 80s shoulder pads. They're not people like me sat in my living room, like making up these programs and helping people on Zoom. But actually, that is these days what an entrepreneur is. And so I felt really good about that. But it wasn't really until last year that I realized if I really wanted a game-changing, profitable business, there's this shift that happens, this way I need to think differently. And I was looking at what other people were doing. I was like, what's different about that person there who's like proper standout, making tons of money, doing really well? What's the difference between that person and like this person or me? And there was definitely something different, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. They seemed to be doing the same kind of things. And I realized that it was actually just a mentality. They were doing things like a CEO would do them, not like a one-man band would do them, even though they started off, or probably sometimes even were, a one-man band. I realized that I needed to think like a CEO. And I liked the analogy, because I'm someone that is quite new to this online entrepreneurial world. You know, I wasn't an entrepreneur before. I didn't really understand people that had businesses. I thought they were all sort of born into it in some way, even though they weren't. And so I knew the corporate world. I was in the corporate world for a long time. And in the corporate world, you have a CEO, you have a chief executive officer that sits on the top, thinks up all the strategy, makes all the big decisions, and then you have like, it could be a small team or it could be a bigger team below it. And the CEO thinks differently. They don't think of themselves as the business, not in a personal brand way, because I still think we all have to see ourselves as the business in that way. We are our personal brand. But I mean, forget the brand, but the actual business part of having a business, the day-to-day running of it, they don't see themselves as that business. They see themselves as heading it. And so I decided last year to start thinking like a CEO, to start making the decisions in my business that were what a CEO would do. Like, what would a CEO do? I have a little picture behind me right now that says, what would Lisa do? But all I was thinking is, what would a CEO do? Because I wanted to make big shifts, big strides in my business. And I didn't quite think I was doing that by just being an entrepreneur or being a business owner or a solopreneur, or whatever the terms are these days. And we won't even go into mompreneur. That will be an entire podcast episode on its own. Scathing. We'll just say solopreneur for now. So up until that day, and it was a day that I said, right, I'm going to act like a CEO in my business. Up until that day, I'd wake up in the morning and decide what I was going to do in my business that day. like that day. I go, right, what am I going to do in my business this day? What should I do? Should I write a program? Should I think of something else to offer? Should I record this? Should I write this piece of content? Which now when I look back, that seems really weird that I would decide that day what I was going to do for my business. Like, where's the big picture in that? It was just me deciding that day when I woke up. And the problem with that is it was just me and my ideas, which may or may not work, and me just deciding on the day. So these successful people that I looked at around that, they weren't playing at anything. They were doing things from the outside that looked terrifying to me. They looked risky, like some of the things they were doing. They were doing big things. And at first I thought, well, they're doing these big things because they've been doing it ages. So they've worked up to that. But then I met a load of people who had just started the same time as me. And they were making huge strides and they were doing risky things. They were doing big things in their business and they were new. And I was like, okay, so it's not just a case of you wait until you're ready for it. You've just got to decide that you're the CEO from then. So what kind of things did I change? Well, the first thing I changed was staff. So I was working on my own, even up until I was making seven figures. It was just me. I had the odd tech VA that was helping me for a few hours a week to do some of the sales pages and that kind of thing that I needed. But the rest of it was me. So like I was the marketing person. I was the customer services person. I was the delivery person. I was all the people, which if you were thinking of your business as a proper business with you as the CEO, you need people who are in their zone of genius doing those things. And you need it before you're ready. I wasn't ready, even at seven figures. I should have been ready by then, shouldn't I? But I wasn't because I was only like 2 years into my business. And so it's like, I just wanted to wait because I didn't want to delegate anything because I was that ridiculous person that thought nobody will be able to do it as well as I do it. Which, come on, like, of course people are going to be able to do things better than me. Like, I'm not brilliant at writing. I'm not the person that's brilliant at like marketing and coming up with content. It's other people who are going to be much better than that, especially tech. You know, I am not the person that's going to be good at the tech. And yet I thought I should be doing it all myself. So I should have, I now realize I should have started earlier. Earlier on, I should have thought, you know what? Who is going to be good at this? And no, I can't afford them right now because I'm not bringing in that much money in my business. But it's going to mean if I hire this person, I will then have more time in my business to do the things I am good at, like selling. So I should have done it earlier, but I didn't. So I started taking on staff, and we'll do a whole episode on how to do that and what kind of things I did. But it was slow for me. Like, I say slow. Within a year and a half, I had a team of six. So it wasn't that slow. But I took on one person who took a bit of stuff away from me. Then I took on another and I built it up slowly. We're just about to take on three more people. So it's got better. I've got more used to hiring people now. But a CEO will hire people who are better than them at the parts of the job that they're not so good at. And they won't have an ego and think that they are the best person at everything because they're not. The second thing I did was change who I was on social media. So when you look at people who are CEOs in their business, they're not involved in like the gossip, the chat, the little arguments that go on social media, the sniping each other. They're not on there really very much at all. So for me, it was about, okay, I'm going to take a step back from social media. I'm not going to be on there as much, but I don't want people to think I'm never there. But there are ways that you can do that. There are easier ways to be seen on social media all the time. So for instance, we decided with my Facebook ads manager, we started to use Facebook ads about this time, and we started to do an omnipresence campaign, which is where when someone looks at your content, they get more of your content that you've already done, like their ads. So, you know, someone could see one of your posts or a video, watch the video for a period of time, and then that will trigger Facebook sending them five more pieces of your content into their feed. And then if they looked at three of those pieces of content, that would trigger Facebook ads to show them 20 more. So all I had to do was come up with 40 pieces of content, like 40 posts or videos or whatever, and put them on Facebook as Facebook ads. And the rest, it would seem to people who were new to me, like, God, she's everywhere. She's on social media all the time. But actually, I was on it very, very little. And still now, I will write the odd post when I'm usually when I'm on an aeroplane, because that's for some reason when ideas come to me is when I'm traveling. So I'll write the odd post on my personal page. And then that will be turned into a post for Instagram, which will be turned into a post for my Facebook page. Might even go into an email. If it's good enough and we've got lots of engagement, we'll turn it into an ad in that omnipresence campaign. All I'll have done is written one post that I really care about. So it meant that I could be away from Facebook for much longer so that I didn't get dragged into the little battles that happen on social media. Because when you think about, you know, when people say bad things about me on the internet, I feel this ridiculous need to respond, to defend. Whereas if you look at someone like Brené Brown or Oprah, if someone says something bad about them on the internet, pretty sure they don't go, oh, I'm going to reply back to that. They don't care. And so I needed to become more like that, because that's what a CEO would do. It isn't what an entrepreneur would do, but it is what a CEO would do. So it's about choosing those battles you want to fight. And when you do decide to choose a battle, it's about going legal instead of going public, which is very different. So I started to think in that way, and things got easier. And actually, I felt kind of freeing not being on social media all the time. And at the same time, I made some big decisions. Like, a CEO decides where they're going to show up. I decided I did not want to be on Clubhouse. It didn't make me feel good. I don't think my ideal client are there. So I decided to come off it. I decided to come off LinkedIn. I might go back to it at some stage, but I haven't needed it for the last year. And I was just like, I just don't want to be in that space. I want to concentrate on the spaces I enjoy being in. And you can do that as a CEO. You can make the decisions. The other thing that changed was the CEO mindset of investing. So when you're an entrepreneur, you think of all the money as your money. So when you're in debt, you think you're in debt. When you have money in the account, you think of it as your money when you're an entrepreneur, or, you know, when you have a business owner. But when you're a CEO, you think of it as the business's money and the business's debt. And so you start thinking about investing in a real different way. So things like, if I want my business to be bigger, I need better systems. I need more staff. I need to be in better masterminds. And I was able to then spend money without that, oh my God, I shouldn't be spending this much on a mastermind, or, you know, should I really be spending this much on this new system that we want to use in the business? Because when you do that and you feel like it's your money, it feels really hard. Like, for somebody like me who never, ever has had money, it feels really hard to give money away like that. Like, you know, should I really be spending it on this new system? What if it doesn't work? It would make me spiral into a panic of money spending. When it's the business's money, it's like, if I want to grow the business needs to spend some money. The business needs to invest in itself. And it was so much easier to spend the money on things that previous to that I would have seen as a bit risky. Like, my business can be risky. It's not me being risky. My business is being risky. I'm just the CEO of that business making the decision that my business is going to risk some stuff and to be a bit heavier with investing in itself so that it can make more money. And so that's what I did. And I went into, you know, some of the best masterminds. I got some of the best systems. You know, we went from using things like MailerLite and ActiveCampaign to putting everything into Kartra. And we upgraded so that we had the VIP option on everything. We got more staff in, and all of these things cost. But if you want to be at a certain point in your business, you have to think of where your business needs to be at that point. So, like, if you're saying, well, I want to make 6 million next year, what does your business need to make 6 million? And you think backwards. So you're like, okay, well, it definitely needs 2 members of staff. It needs this. It needs this. And in the next episode, I'm going to talk about what we do on my strategy days. And I'll go into this in more detail, how we like work out, well, actually, what does it need to get there? But it can often mean investing in things that you're not there yet, but it's where you vision your business is going to be in a year. So you need the things in place, the systems in place for it. The other thing we changed was strategy. So strategy before was, what are we going to, you know, put out in the next 6 months? And how much is it going to cost? And what kind of marketing activities are we going to do? And that was kind of it for strategy. Whereas we started to think bigger, we started to think further, like, where do we want to be in a year, in 2 years? Like, that's what a CEO would do. They'd think bigger numbers. They'd think bigger timeline. And they'd think, how can every person in the team that we have, even if it's just two people, support that goal to thinking bigger? Realizing that I didn't have to be involved in every detail. The CEO is not involved in every decision. The CEO is not involved in every single tiny detail. And yet, at that point, I was involved in every detail, even though, you know, even when I had a tech VA plus, you know, someone helping with like the business management side of things, and even when I had an ads manager, I was still the one deciding everything. Whereas actually, you have to let team members decide things. You have strategy days with all of you involved so that the whole team knows what needs to happen, even if that's just you and a PA or you and a tech VA, or whether you have a team of 20. Everyone needs to know what the vision is, where you're going, how you're going to get there, so that they can all support that. And I wasn't thinking like that. It was only me that knew everything. I was handing out tasks to people, but they weren't autonomously being able to make these decisions on their own about what would be best for the business. Everything would come through me. So that changed. One of the biggest things that changed is learning from others. Instead of trying to kind of think cheaply, I think as entrepreneurs, we always want to keep the costs down, don't we? So we're always like, well, what's the cheapest way I can learn this information? I'll do a course or whatever, or do a free webinar, or I'll read a book. Instead of trying to think like that and climbing this ladder like one rung at a time, I thought, well, if I was a CEO in a business, I wouldn't be climbing the ladder one rung at a time, learning from someone who's only two steps up from me. I know we hear that all the time. You know, you only need to learn from someone two steps up from you. And I thought, well, you know, what about if I learn from people that are where I want to be in 3 years, but I learn from them now so that I can understand the strategies that they have in place to run their business in 3 years' time, so I know where I'm headed. And maybe I can skip a few rungs of this ladder and get there a little bit quicker. And so that's what I did. Rather than kind of every 2 months doing another course, I just went for the big ones. I just went, okay, let's just learn everything I need to know on this subject now. Because it felt like a false economy to keep buying cheap. I was buying all the cheapest things out there, cheapest courses, the cheapest coaches, like people that were just enough ahead of me that I could afford them. When actually what I should have been doing is going, well, let's go to the best person who knows about that and pay the right amount, because eventually I'm going to make that money back because I'll get there quicker. But also, not just about buying cheap, but it's also a false economy to keep doing everything yourself. So instead of paying to learn how to do lots of things and then spending months implementing that, I started paying people to do things like Facebook ads. Instead of doing them myself, I thought, well, you know, would a CEO sit there and do the ads themselves? Or would they go, you know what, let's get the right person to do this and pay money to be able to do that? And it's a lot of money. It's a big risk when you start using Facebook ads for the first time. So I started to get people to do things for me and spend on that. A big one was, when you act like a CEO, you have to not be scared of implementing boundaries. This is the one thing that constantly, even after I started putting everything else into practice to feel like a CEO of my business, it's the one thing that made me feel like I wasn't one. I was just really scared of taking action to do the bad things in business. The things that we all want to be liked at the end of the day. We want to be liked by everyone. We don't want to be that person that everyone goes, well, she did this to me, or, well, I didn't like that she did this. And so I was scared of implementing boundaries. I was scared of taking action to sack clients who were, you know, really not being very good people, not being people that I would want to work with. I'd work with them for ages, even though every time I saw an email pop up from them, I'd be like, oh God, it's that client. And I thought, why am I not just, in my contract, it says that I can basically fire clients. And yet I was never putting it into practice because I didn't want them to dislike me or to say to somebody else, oh, I didn't like this person. It was rubbish working with them. Because, you know, when you sack a client, they're going to tell everybody that you are not good to work with, of course, because, you know, that's what they do. No person ever wants to realize their own blame, their own fault. And so I was scared of doing that. I was scared of saying no to people that were using my audience and taking advantage of me. Like, for instance, I had people that said they were going to be affiliates for me. And because I knew that they were going to be affiliates, I always liked to quid pro quo. I always liked to help out. So because they were like, oh yeah, I'm going to be an affiliate for you next year, I would be like shouting about them to my audience. And if they had something coming out, I'd be sending clients their way. I would be wanting to nurture that relationship with people and make sure that I was doing my bit back for them. And then when it came to it, like 8 months later, when my affiliate launch started, they were nowhere to be seen. They, you know, they were doing their own thing. They weren't interested in at all in helping me. And I've been helping them for a year. So, you know, cutting those people off a bit, not giving so much. You can be friends with people and not have to give them everything. And I found that before that, all I was doing was giving, 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 and I wasn't really getting anything back. So a CEO would never do that. They would have very strategic relationships. They would still be friends with everybody, but they would only help those people who had helped them. It would be a very quid pro quo strategic partnership situation between two corporate companies. So I started to think the same way and not allow myself to just, you know, give everything to everyone all the time and let everybody use my audience. I had one person that she had been a client. This is a couple of years ago. And I classed her, I suppose, as a friend because she was a lovely client. And, you know, we talked sometimes nothing to do with work. And then she would always say to me, oh, you know, I'm launching this thing. Am I allowed to just write a little bit about it in your Facebook group? And I'd always be a bit like, well, you're not really allowed to promote yourself in my Facebook group. And she'd go, yeah, but we are friends. And so I would let her get away with a lot more than I would let anybody else, which is not fair on anybody else in there either. But, you know, there's a boundary there that I wasn't able to say no to. And then one day I said no. And she didn't do what I did. I think she did something to do with like nutrition and you know, balance and that kind of thing. And so it wasn't like there's a conflict of interest, but it was still a boundary. And so one day she then said, oh, can I sell this thing in your audience? And I said, I'm afraid I'm going to have to say no, because it's not fair on everybody else. And she never spoke to me again. Like, literally, I was cut off from that day. And I realized that there were certain people that were being friends with me just because they wanted my audience. And I'm a bit naive, so I didn't realize any of those things. But a CEO would see that straight away and just stick to the boundaries from the off. So they wouldn't get into that position where they might be being taken advantage of without realizing it, because a CEO would just stick to the company line. You know, the policy is nobody is allowed to promote to your audience, whether they're friends or not. A CEO wouldn't go, well, as your mate. And so I started to act like a CEO and I started to push back and say no to, you know, I'm not going to share your things. No, you're not going to do this. I knew by doing that I'd lose people. I knew that it would mean people that actually were being friends with me for certain reasons might not be friends with me anymore. But, you know, that's okay. That has to happen. And I started and still do sever any kind of like brand collaborations that didn't share my values. I did that very recently. I stopped using somebody for gifts that I give to people because I realized from something that they had written on social media that actually we don't share the same values. And I don't have to, you know, have a brand collaboration with someone to be nice to them. I don't have to. A CEO wouldn't do that. A CEO would go, this is ruining the corporate brand, and therefore we have to cut partnership, whether you're friends or not. And so that's what I've been doing. And not worrying about the fact that I know then that they would go and talk badly of me to people, because a CEO wouldn't worry about that. So that's how I've been acting. And, you know, this was my hardest one. This boundaries one was by far my hardest one. And maybe you can relate. Maybe you're not great at boundaries either. It always makes me feel better when somebody says, yeah, I'm not great at boundaries. I often say yes to people when I mean no, because I just want them to like me. And I was the same. And I would always worry that people would often say to me, but so many people talk badly about you already. You know, I've talked to you in different episodes about how other UK coaches weren't very nice to me when I first started because I did things too quickly and people didn't like that. And so people would say to me, like friends would say to me, but if people are already talking badly about you, like if you say no to these people, what about your reputation? They're going to start talking about you. And so because of that, I was so worried that they were right. And I was so worried about people saying bad things about me and my reputation. I wasn't standing up for my company for fear of people thinking badly. But actually, it's really, really important that you stand up for your brand. You stand up for your company, you stand up for yourself. And your reputation will only get better when people see you have boundaries in place. And a CEO acts differently to an entrepreneur in that way. Another boundary that a CEO wouldn't do is people not paying. We had a couple of people not pay. Not many. I'm very lucky in the regard that we've only had two, probably less than a handful of people that haven't paid for big things in the business. And because of, you know, I talk about integrity all the time. And when people haven't paid before, they've written to me saying, well, I can't afford it because this happened. If you had integrity, you would let me off this. And I'd always feel really bad, like, God, yeah, I do have integrity. So I need to let them off this, which is ridiculous. Integrity is, you know, paying your bills. Integrity is having a boundary that you stick to for everybody, not just the person that gives you the biggest sob story on email. And that sounds harsh, but I'd often say, oh, yeah, you don't worry, you don't have to pay it. I feel really bad for you that you can't afford it. And then 2 weeks later, they'd be working with another coach and I'd feel like a fool. And that happened so many times that I realized that a CEO would never even get the chance to write to the CEO to tell them your problem. It wouldn't get to that stage. And so I began to have real good boundaries with people not paying. We drew up policies in the business so that it was no longer even my decision to make. I could just follow the policy. The policy says, if you don't pay, we will take you to court. And when we take you to court, this is how we will do it. And if you want to do a payment plan, we will offer a payment plan. And, you know, there will be ways around it, but it would be a policy in place rather than just me feeling bad for certain people that had become, you know, I'd become friendly with, because I do become friendly with all my clients. And so then I wasn't acting like a CEO because of that. I was saying yes to some and no to others. And there was no real policy around it. And that's exactly the same with negative feedback. Like if somebody complains, for instance, let's say if someone complained to me before, that they would write directly to me and they would say, oh, I didn't like this about your one-to-one, or I've finished your course, I've done it all, but I didn't think it was worth it. So can I have all my money back? Or something like that. And the negative feedback, I would be doing different things to different people. Like sometimes I would be giving a refund. Sometimes I would be saying no. Again, because I was just acting like an entrepreneur and dealing with things as they came up. And I realized that actually, and I would take it to heart, because when someone said negative feedback about me as a consultant, I would take it to heart because it was me that they're talking about. It was my course that I had written. When you start thinking like a CEO, you don't think like that anymore. You think, okay, someone's complaining about the company, something that happened in the company. You're the CEO. It doesn't affect you. You can just make decisions on it. But we had an operating procedure. We drew up an operating procedure. If somebody makes a complaint, somebody's not happy with something, what do we do? What steps do we follow in the business? And then I could follow those steps and say, okay, here's the procedure that we now have to deal with it. This is what we're going to do. And it would be nothing to do with me anymore. And I wouldn't feel so much like they were just complaining about me as a person, because as a person, you're always going to be emotionally involved. As a CEO of a company, you're not. This is like a really different way of thinking. And it's made a big difference to my business. We've grown hugely since I started thinking of myself as a CEO. Even when I only had like one member of staff, I started to think of myself as a CEO. I would say, what would a CEO do in this situation? Whatever came up, somebody wrote something bad on the internet. What would a CEO do if somebody wrote something bad about their company? They'd go legal. They wouldn't get into a slanging match on Facebook, would they? You know, those kind of things. Like if we needed to invest in your company, what would a CEO do? Would they go for the cheapest one, or would they properly think out what's right for the company? Hopefully that makes sense to you. Hopefully it's helped and helped you to start thinking of your business as a business. It's not just you as a solopreneur at your kitchen table. You're a business. And if you want to be a thriving business, a business that makes huge strides, you do have to have that shift in how you think of it as a business and how you think of yourself as the CEO. If you have any comments on this, obviously, I would love to hear from you. So either write to me at lisa@lisajohnson.com or put some comments where you subscribe and all of that kind of stuff in the comments section of the podcast, because I do read them all and I'd love to hear what you think of each episode. And I'd love a rating as well, if you can be bothered to do it. I'm always happy to have a rating on this episode. And I'm going to be back. And in the next episode, I really want to talk to you about how I structure my strategy days. So I'm talking about not strategy days for clients, but my own. So when we sit down and have a strategy day for our business and say, okay, what are we going to do in the next year? How are we going to make the money we want to make? We do certain steps. And because we've just had one, it's fresh in my mind. So I'm going to talk to you about what we talked about and what kind of things we do in those strategy days so you can have your own. Okay, have a great day, whatever it is you're doing, and I will speak to you soon. Thank you for listening to Making Money Online with Lisa Johnson. If you'd like to get hold of my guide to launching, go to lisajohnson.com/launch and let's get you making money online.